Yesterday we were discussing the idea of the mitzvah of immediate burial as opposed to allowing the body to remain out. And we noted that there's a Torah level prohibition associated with leaving a body out, and there's a mitzvah d'oraisa, a positive commandment to bury the body in a timely fashion. And we equally noted that in the land of Israel, there's a second Torah level prohibition which is triggered. The Torah formulates that this would be a contamination of the land of Israel. So we said that there's an exception to that rule, that when you're dealing with burial for the purposes of showing greater honor to the deceased, so for example, to bring proper burial shrouds, or to bring an aron, or to ensure that close family members are able to participate in the funeral, then it is permissible. And again, I mentioned that the situation in the United States of America versus the situation in Israel is dramatically different, because here in the United States of America, the workers in the cemetery are unionized, and you can only bury up until a certain hour in the day, whereas in Israel, they really do work around the clock. And those of you who have been there are aware of the fact that, again, the way that the laws are constructed is much more conducive with the natural halacha. So unless it's a military funeral, then there's no coffin altogether, just straight into the ground. And in addition to that, the burials can take place at night, really, as soon as possible. And people who fly to Israel for purposes of burial, or are flown to Israel for purposes of burial, you could literally get right off the plane and you go straight to the cemetery, really at any time of day or night. So the Mishnah continues on, that's where we had left off, with the following idea. But in the case of capital punishment, the individual would not be buried bekivros avosav. He would not be buried right away in the family burial plot, because there's generally speaking a prohibition to bury somebody who was righteous alongside somebody who did something so wicked. We're going to see that once the body decomposes and once all you have left is the bones, that those can be transferred. And along those same lines of not burying the righteous right next to the wicked, it's important, and there's no evidence for this in the Torah, and there's no basis for this other than halacha lemoshe misinai, no basis for this other than just accepted oral tradition, that of the four capital penalties, we divide them into two different groups of two. So there's stoning and burning, skila and sreifa, they go into the same burial plot, and then there's hereg and chenek, there's decapitation and strangulation, and they go into the same burial plot as well. Shnei batei kibros hayu misukanin lebeisdin, achas l'ne'aragin l'nechnakin, v'achas l'niskalin u'lenisrafin. One of them is for purposes of decapitation and strangulation, and the other is for purposes of stoning as well as burning. So again, when it comes to the righteous being buried alongside the wicked, we even differentiate between various forms of capital punishment. Nis'akel habasar, once the flesh is decomposed, in other words, after a certain amount of time, however long that takes, number of months, melachten es ha'atzamos, the bones can be gathered up, v'kovrin osan b'mekoman, and they can be moved into the family burial plot. So the question is, you know, what's this period of time of decomposition of the flesh? Why would we wait this long? So the basic halachic approach is that once the flesh is decomposed, that itself serves as expiation, as atonement, as kapara, and then the individual bones can be moved into the family burial plot, because there's no longer any problem whatsoever of burying the righteous next to the wicked, because after the body has decomposed, that is considered full expiation. V'hakrovim, now this to me is maybe the most fascinating halacha in all of the Mishnah. What do you think the relatives have to do with respect to the witnesses and the judges? So the halacha demands, and this is not an easy thing to do, these are just the people who sentenced their relative to capital penalty, and their witnesses came and testified, you know, against their relative. So the Mishnah says, and the Rambam paskins this lahalacha, hakrovim ba'in v'sho'alin b'shlom ha'dayanim. They consult with the judges, u'v'shlom ha'edim, and along the witnesses as well. Kelomar, ein b'libeinu aleichem. There is no hard feelings between our family and your family, shedin emes dantem, because you have adjudicated properly in accordance with Torah law. So you can imagine this is a very difficult thing to do. There's obviously no analog for this in American law, that if you're subject to capital penalty, you have to come, the family members, to the judge and say, you know, you did a fair job. You have to come to witnesses and say, you know, you testified honestly and accurately. This is beyond the ken of what could be conceivable in terms of American law. But again, the Mishnah is suggesting that for purposes of shalom, we're not interested in adjudicating capital penalties for fun. And again, the Mishnah says that a Bezdin that would kill anybody every 7 years, that's already chavlanus, that's considered destructive. And the next opinion is every 70 years, that's considered destructive. That's Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. And then there's Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon who say that if they were, again, had they lived in the times of 40 years prior to the exile of the Sanhedrin from the Lishkas HaGazis, that they would have scuttled every capital penalty case that they were ever a part of. But at least in theory, the point is if that a capital penalty had to be adjudicated, that the relatives would come and the relatives would say, to the judges and to the witnesses that we don't hold anything against you. And now again, just to review, as we come to the end of the Mishnah, there's a fundamental difference in halacha between what we call avelos and what we call aninus. So again, aninus is the period in between the death and the burial when the relatives are exempted from all of the mitzvos aseisha b'torah. They're not allowed to, God forbid, kill or steal or speak lashon hara or do any of the prohibitions in the Torah. But they are exempted from all mitzvahs, I say, in the Torah. And there are two different rationales for that in the Talmud Bavli. One of them is that they're kind of osik b'mitzvah, patar mina mitzvah. They're involved in the mitzvah of kavura. And the other is mishum kvodo shomes. Even if they're not directly involved, nonetheless, they can't carry on as if nothing had happened. So the Mishnah says that when it comes to capital penalties, v'lo hayu mis'ablin, there's no halacha of avelos, that they don't mourn, and we'll give two different reasons for this in a second, but they do have the halacha of aninus. Aval onanin she'en aninus ela balev. They're allowed to be in a period of aninus until the body was actually buried, and again, the burial would be attended to by the based in itself. So the question is, if there's aninus, why shouldn't there be any avelus? And here we have a machlokas between Rashi and Rambam as to the absence of avelus. So Rashi takes the position that this also is for the kapara of the individual who had to be subject to the capital penalty. And because there's a bizoy, there's a kind of denigration involved in somebody's death, if he's not subject to mourning, that too will provide expiation for that individual, just like we talked about the decomposition of the flesh itself, providing for a degree of expiation and atonement. That's the perspective of Rashi. Rambam disagrees, and Rambam says, when would the avelus begin? Avelus, in theory, would begin from the moment of what we call stima sagolel, in other words, for burial. But since you're not allowed to do avelus at that point for aruge bezdin, you'd have to wait for a decomposition. The Rambam's language is, both in the Perish of Mishnayos as well as the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam says, ho'ol v'idchi idchi, since you missed the proper starting point for avelus, so once avelus has been deferred, one doesn't restart the avelus. So again, here we have a machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam as to why there's no avelus for haruge bezdin. So just to return in the few moments that we have before we begin Maariv at 7:45 to this halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai of there being two different burial paths, one for niskalin and nisrafin and one for nechnakin and neragin. It's an interesting thing. This halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai is recorded by the Gemara in Masechta Yevamos on Daf Mem Zayin as one of the things that's supposed to be related to the convert, the putative convert, during the process of conversion. It's based on a pasuk in Megillah Esrus, where Rus says to Naomi as a declaration of her dedication to her mother-in-law, and she says, "Basher tamus yamus v'shame kaver." So the Gemara Masechta Yevamos darshins v'shame kaver that Naomi was explaining. You have to understand the Jewish religion, and in the Jewish religion, the Beis Din has two different burial plots for different kinds of capital cases. And you always wonder with that Gemara Yevamos, like, how did this become an important halacha to communicate at that time? It seems like a very esoteric thing. But I actually think that this idea that the halacha, and this goes back to what we were saying over the last number of days, that we see the hafta l'reacha kamocha brought up more times in the context of how we give somebody a capital penalty than in any other area of halacha. Even though, again, we normally understand the hafta l'reacha kamocha reacha b'torah v'mitzvos. But again, we're paying such careful attention to the kavod of the individual whom we're putting to death, and maybe that's the pshat in the Gemara in Yevamos, that somebody who's converting to Judaism has to understand, as Rabbi Akiva said, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha zaklal gadol b'torah. And as such, we pay such careful attention to every single detail involved in the capital penalty. And you'd say, okay, if somebody's already being put to death because they did something so severe, what difference does it really make if it's skila, if it's reifa, if it's hereg, or it's chenek? The bottom line is the person obviously deserved capital penalties, and I guess what was being communicated in that Gemara in Masechta Yevamos is that no, it's not all the same, and that again, if somebody was subject to a lesser form of capital punishment, even though they're being put to death, so they're not buried alongside individuals who did something far worse. So that aspect of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha Bror Lo Misa Yafe is perhaps something of great significance to communicate to a prospective convert. Point number one. Point number two, again, just to return to this idea that the krovim, that the witnesses are supposed to approach, and again, it's not just the Mishnah, the Rambam Paskins at Lahalacha are supposed to approach the Dayanim, that they're supposed to approach the Edim and say, we understand that you were doing what you were supposed to do, again, is reflective of this idea that, when the Dayanim get together to make such a decision, you know, they don't take the decision lightly. And as we spoke about at the time, they do halanas hadin. This is something that they can't decide in a day. We need extreme majorities, as we talked about. Lok hatayascha l'schus, hatayascha l'chova. And this is not something that the judges wanted to do, and it's not something that the witnesses were doing for fun. As we spoke about earlier in the Masechta, ketzad ma'ayimin ha'edim, that they're threatened, and they have to be told that, you know, this is, one life is the equivalent of the entire world. So I was just thinking about this Mishnah a little bit and thinking about how important this is, you know, from the perspective of the judges and the witnesses. They could really be traumatized for the rest of their lives by having sent somebody to the death, even though that's exactly what halacha requires them to do. And maybe, just maybe, I'm speculating, I can't prove this, but maybe the reason... With this, we'll conclude. Maybe the reason that the Mishnah is requiring the family members to come to the judges and the witnesses and to say, you did the right thing, dantem din emes, ve'ein aleinu b'libeinu klum aleichem, that we don't have anything against you, is meant to be healing for the witnesses and for the dayanim who are involved, because it's such a painful process, as we spoke about yesterday, the way that the Rambam read the Mishnah. Rabbi Yitzchak and I were talking about this against the Rashi and the Bartanura, as Mashchina Omeres, Kalani Ala Biroshi, Kalani Alai Bizroi, how difficult it is for those who have to impose punishment on children, on students, in this case, on members of society, how literally painful that is, and how traumatic it could be to have to send somebody to their death. So the fact that the family members come along and say, we know that this wasn't personal, we know this wasn't out of malice, we know this wasn't capricious, we know this wasn't arbitrary, we know that this is really just a product of your commitment to the halachic system, maybe that's very important psychologically for these individuals. Again, they're professional dayanim, but they're still human beings, and certainly for the witnesses to be able to go forward with their lives, not feeling this terrible burden of shame, a terrible burden of guilt of having sent somebody to their death, when really all they were doing was adjudicating the halacha in its appropriate fashion. Rabbi Hanani ben